You're going to want to stick around for today's episode of Rat Race Reboot, where we continue the conversation around the topic of burnout. Today, we have guests, Dr. Paul Coppola, organizational leadership psychologist and faculty at William James College. Dr. Leanne Tortez, industrial organizational psychologist and faculty at William James College, and PsyDE candidate Ryan McCready, senior principal in organizational effectiveness at Slalom and teaching fellow at Harvard. You're going to want to stick around.
Welcome to Rat Race Reboot. I'm your host, Laura Noel. And as a certified coach and former 27-year military leader, each week, I provide bite-sized mindset pivots that will help you reset your mind, reawaken your spirit, and regain your control.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Rat Race Reboot. I am really thrilled to have these guests on our show, and I'm so thrilled because you are going to take away some wonderful bits and nuggets of knowledge and inspiration to help you if you find yourself stuck in the rat race and in burnout mode. But first and foremost, Paul, Leanne, Ryan, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks, Laura. Great to be here.
Yeah, my pleasure. Well, first and foremost, I find this topic really interesting, fascinating. There are so many people stuck in the rat race and in burnout mode. It's a topic clearly that you're passionate about because you've dedicated so much time and energy and effort into researching the topic. So I'd love to hear from each one of you, what got you interested in the topic of burnout? And we can start with Paul.
Sure. Well, you know, it's interesting because when you look at society and we look at what's happening in the workplace and we think about the individuals and how they're impacted, one thing that you start to notice is, and especially when I've been working directly with individuals, a lot of times you hear the term, I'm so burnt out. And, you know, you really start to wonder, what does that even mean? And, you know, when we use it, a lot of times it's that expression of emotional fatigue. And sometimes it's maybe not even seeing the value in the work. And so a lot of times people will present one or two of the three components that really make up what burnout is. And one of the things that I started to also notice is that sometimes people try to escape burnout. And, you know, the research shows that it takes over 2 years to really recover from the impact of burnout. But what was really interesting to me too, Laura, and really what piqued kind of the work that I was doing was burnout didn't necessarily just happen in the workplace. Life is happening all around us, and it can be happening for many factors, both personally and professionally. It could be, perhaps it is your ability to process and handle certain type of work, but it also really started to appear that maybe how you identify and can your true identity come through. Also, what environmental factors are going on in your personal and professional life? And so really trying to understand that deeper driver behind it and how can we measure that and understand it?
I definitely want to dive into, as we get deep into the conversation, those three components of burnout. But I'm interested also, had you experienced burnout or had you seen it? Was it prevalent around you, around your colleagues and coworkers?
You know, I definitely have seen it. For myself, I probably have experienced it at different points when you're all into something and you go through a lot of times emotional fatigue, candidly, is probably the one that I experienced the most of all the presenting symptoms. But yes, sometimes I've experienced where maybe you don't feel the value of your work or you can't see that deeper purpose. And then sometimes it's the why does it matter, right? And that may be the cynicism aspect that's the least presenting. But I think, you know, it's very natural to experience. The difference though is how do we process it? And I think for me, it's making sure that I also understood maybe what the deeper driver of it was so that we can continue to work, or do you need support to work through it? So that was really important from my perspective.
Okay. Thanks for sharing that. And I think as we talk through this, I mean, I think it's going to be really important for listeners to walk away with some takeaways, you know, and maybe have a deeper understanding or a way that they can look into what are these drivers for them? What are the symptoms for them? And what are some of the ways that they can address those drivers and process, as you say, these feelings of burnout, no matter what the aspect is, whether it's emotional or the different aspects of burnout. But thank you so much. And Leanne, I'd love to hear from you. What sparked your interest in the topic of burnout?
Yeah, there's so much of what you said, Paul, that I also resonate with. And I think we have a lot of overlap there. I've definitely been in those roles where I felt like I was burning out or definitely on the edge of burnout. And even at times today, I feel like that as well. And for me, what stands out to me is that burnout is really relational. It's not just us. And like Paul said, it's not just the bubble of work, but it impacts who we are when we go home. And I'm also a work family researcher. So that is really important to me, is understanding how what happens in our work life is also affecting what's happening in our home life and our family life. But it is relational, and it's between you and your boss. It's between you and your coworkers, and maybe you're serving clients. And that is just so impactful. And it's just so much a part of our day-to-day. And that has really driven me to want to understand burnout and really understand what are those kinds of support that we need to prevent burnout, or unfortunately, if it reaches that stage, how do we get out of burnout? But I think that the work you're doing on this podcast, Laura, is so important for people to just feel like, okay, I'm not alone. Other people are experiencing it. And how can I learn from them in order to help myself? And so yeah.
Thank you. I love that you're keying in on the relational aspect of burnout, because I know I've experienced burnout, and quite honestly, that was at the pinnacle of my career. And there's still times when I experience it, because one of the episodes I talked about your passion and how that could fuel burnout, you know, even when we're doing something that we love. And at the pinnacle of my career a long time ago, I was experiencing tremendous levels of burnout. And it was probably, even though I was, my footprint was everywhere and I was a visible leader, it was probably the most lonely I've ever felt in my entire life. It was very isolating, because it is relational. It impacts everything you touch and every relationship you're in. And even when that thing, that cause, if we want to, you know, point a finger toward the cause of our burnout, even if we eliminate that, you know, perceived cause, it's still there. And so what are some ways that we can mitigate that and get out of it? That relational aspect of it, thank you for bringing that up. That's so important. And Ryan, I'd love to hear from you. What inspired you to study this?
Yeah, so similar to others, obviously, Paul and Leanne, very similar motivations. I myself found myself as a manager. I was leading a large group of people for a while. And I think one of the times that it really blew my mind, if you will, was when one of my employees came up to me and said, "I quit." And I was very surprised, because this is one of my most jovial employees. I was very excited for them. Would do anything to move mountains for them. And I said, "Why?" Why all of a sudden? There was no notice. You know, we hadn't talked about this. We had regular check-ins. And he said, "You know, when I look at the past year of my life, I haven't really had a life." And he was like, "I haven't been to the gym. My relationships are falling. Like, I just don't really know who I am outside of what I do all the time. And that's work." And he was like, he didn't say it in these words, but he was like, "The insidious thing is we did it with a smile. It felt good, but then I realized there was nothing else." And as soon as I realized that, I was like, "I got to stop this." And that was a big wake up moment for me as a manager and as a leader to say, "Wow, that is, I would never want to do that. Like, I feel like I pulled one over. Like, this was not some evil tactic or anything." Luckily he ended up staying on with the company, and we revised, you know, working schedules, et cetera. And I like to say I did the 4-day work week before it was cool, but I had to make those changes after I realized it my people, and they got burnt out. And I was like, "That's horrible." And I myself have also experienced, you know, burnout to various degrees, and get close to it still today. And in the management consulting industry, it's an industry known for burnout. I mean, to be frank, you know, And so that's one of the reasons why I came to Slalom, because the work-life balance was a very large consideration of their branding. And I feel like they largely do well on it. It's still something that we're very focused on, and we'd actually do internal research on, which I think is really cool. So really spending time to understand what is driving wellness across our employees in this industry. So weird things.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. You know, and that's really impactful, that realization. I have this work and I have nothing else. And that's another aspect of burnout, even if we're neglecting a part of ourselves and we're not being the fullest expression of ourselves, or there's no space or room to do that, to be that. But another thing you said that really caught my attention, and I hate to say a benefit, but because maybe we've all experienced burnout from time to time, I don't know about you, but I feel like when I'm heading in that direction toward it, I can feel it a lot sooner, so then I can course correct. Mm-hmm. Have you experienced that as well?
Personally, 100%. I think now having a greater awareness around where those boundaries need to be, I guess you could say. I think that's a large part about burnout, is being able to hold boundaries. But if you have the warning signs and you have greater awareness of when those are going to happen, you can hold those boundaries sooner. Yeah. So that you don't end up in those episodic situations. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. It's almost like it can be a catalyst for change in a lot of ways.
I'm sure. I'm curious of Leanne and Paul's thoughts, but I think the unfortunate reality is, just like that vignette that I shared, for a lot of folks, it takes experiencing genuine deep burnout before they have that catalyst, right? Before they have that awareness building. And it'd be very interesting to use evidence-based approaches in our organizational systems to help draw awareness proactively around those areas and those boundaries and those warning signs, so that people don't have to go to the deep end to come back into the shore, if you will.
Mm. Yeah, because once you're there, it's so hard to come back. I mean, once you're fully in burnout, the recovery is, it's too difficult sometimes. And so I completely agree with you. Being able to recognize and understand where you're at and course correct, like Laura said, at an individual level, but also for organizations to be able to understand where their staff are too, is hugely important.
And I think the other piece of it too is that we all too often are addressing the symptom and we're not addressing the deeper issue. And really understanding what the cause is. It may have nothing to do with the workplace at all, but we carry with us burden that we bring in. And that burden is very personal. It could be related to the environment. It could be related to something that's going on in our personal communities, or perhaps something that we've been dealing with or struggling with. So those triggers can be very deep. And if you can't understand where that might be coming from, we may say we feel burnt out because of what's presenting in front of us. And then it comes back again. And it could be 6 months, it could be 2 months, it could be a week. But really, how do you build that in deeper? And so part of that requires a lot of self-reflection to understand. And a lot of it is, these are learned experiences that we've had over our lifetime. And that's really where it becomes very important for us to look at things a little bit differently as we're working. Because organizations sometimes are trying to address burnout at the system level, but not understanding that there may be other drivers that are coming. All too often you hear an organization say, we're bringing new well-being programs in. And well-being programs have significant impact. But if you're trying to address the fact that I'm dealing with an emotional burden that someone may be bringing to me because of perhaps my race, because of something else I'm experiencing, a well-being program is not going to address that. And so we have to really look. And to your point, Ryan and Leanne, we're looking deeper, right? We're understanding where those drivers are and recognizing that we have to understand where people are to help on that process. And we can't just try to solve sometimes what seems like a very basic presenting symptom.
Mm. Ah. It's so funny that you say that, Paul, because I used to work for a health system, and they did something similar of rolling out these different well-being programs because we know that they're important and we want to show that we're doing things to help our employees. And it's like, well, we had the yoga Monday at 11, like you should have came. And it's like everyone who's experiencing the burnout and are so overwhelmed and overworked, can't go to the yoga at 11. And so it's really about being mindful of, okay, how do we really help our people in ways that are effective and meaningful versus let's just roll out these kind of one and done. Unfortunately, sometimes that's the way it is, just to say that we have a an employee well-being program. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Check the box. It's well intentioned.
Yes. Right?
So how do we begin to get to that? How do we really get at meaningful and helpful, actually being helpful in those regards?
I think one thing, for one, that's why especially organizational psychologists, I think, have a great space to play in. Mm-hmm. In that we need to gray these barriers between, like you said, Paul, directly, right? Like organizational system level implementation program and helping the individuals have the awareness and the skills to manage on their own. And it's not an either or, it's a yes and, right? And I think a lot of it is, how can we help individuals understand the tools, the tactics, the techniques, so that they can navigate their personal and work environments and call that forward. And it's easier said than done too, because it's different for every individual, it's different for a lot of contexts, et cetera. But the beautiful thing is, a lot of the tools and tactics for making boundaries and also having awareness around the signs of burnout are somewhat agnostic at times, right, of context. And so if you give it to the individuals and you build up that toolbox and that repertoire, it enables them to actually change the system with them. And I think that's really important if you take it from a emergent approach rather than a, we're going to push it down in a certain way.
That, I mean, that's, you know, that's the rub. I mean, it's getting to the root cause of it in ways that are actually helpful for people while it's happening, equipping them with the tools, and then it kind of permeating through the organization. I would love to know, and I know all of our listeners would love to know, what is some of the research that you're working on around the topic of burnout? And I know Leanne and Ryan, you're working together on some really interesting things. And Paul, I would love to hear about your research as well. Paul, you know, why don't you go ahead and tell us a little bit about what you've been working on and, you know, what you've really discovered in the midst of this research?
Sure. Well, one of the biggest pieces was to understand what was driving it. And so part of it is, and this was never intended to discredit any research that's been done on burnout, because burnout, when we think about the work that was started with Freudenberger back in the early 1970s and has been just continued to be supported and mainstreamed through the work of Christina Maslach and really just so many founding discoveries. What it was really is to complement that work. And so I actually worked on creating an instrument that actually measures and understands what is driving that burnout. And so it can look at other factors. It looks beyond the traditional things that you might experience in a workplace. It starts to understand some of those deeper underlying factors of your identity and intersectionality. So how somebody may feel that they have one identity that they bring in their personal environment. They have another identity that they have perhaps bring in their professional environment. And where can they bring that forward? Where do they feel comfortable? Or do they have to hold back? And that hold back is a burden that gets placed upon the individual. It also looks at things like environmental factors that I mentioned a little bit earlier, and understanding what may be happening in those surrounding spaces, the types of relationships. And that it's again, we talked about relational and how important that was, but what other connections are there? Can people find their deeper purpose? And do they have that? And are they able to share that? It also starts to look at what types of burden shifts might be occurring. And again, that could be related to identity. It could be related to the roles and authority that we each take up in the spaces that we are. But the measurement was to really bring something forward that was reliable. And we were able to prove that out with the work. So it's really an instrument that we're hoping to be able to now bring forward and share with other organizations that they could perhaps use and understand what might be those drivers, especially to make sure that we can identify the right solutions. And I said solutions because it may not be just one program. There may be a number of things that have to happen. And that may be, how do we think about the organization as a whole? How do we support the individuals within that, and what other work can we do? So the instrument itself is really a way for us to understand that and hopefully simplify what's a very complex and very overwhelming problem for organizations and individuals, and really trying to make it feel more holistic in nature.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. It's getting to the root cause, really. It's right. Like you said earlier, it's not the symptoms that we're, not the Band-Aid that we're putting on, but it's right. really helping, it sounds like, potentially helping people to really reflect and develop a level of self-awareness right. in terms of what are some of these underlying causes so that we can yeah. work toward a solution.
Exactly. And it's kind of getting to that system of the five whys, and we just keep going and really trying to uncover it and not just stopping at that surface. And that really became an important element of it is there more? And I think the simple answer is yes, there is. And it does show how complex we are as human beings. And we have to respect that. And we have to appreciate how we each show up in that space.
Yeah. Yeah. When do you expect some of this to launch and be ready for organizations? Because I can't wait. Okay. It's so valuable.
I'd like to say soon. We're working towards it, and hopefully, in the next few months, we'll definitely have something to share.
Okay. Oh my gosh, I love this conversation. No, because again, the yoga class that I'm too burned out to go to. It's or the meditation.
The mandatory
group meditation. Relax. Well, we know
we throw around the word work-life balance all the time, yeah. and how personal that is, because no one can tell us what work-life balance looks like except for mm-hmm. ourselves, right? And it is in that constantly. It's a very debatable topic right now for all of us and in workplaces. I don't have work-life balance, and we're looking for someone to give it to us. And yet that adds to what we sometimes feel like the whole element of resilience. And it's like, well, I don't get good work-life balance, and I'm going to leave because I'm going to go find it somewhere else. But yet you haven't figured out how to solve it personally. So we all own it. And it's fascinating to see that journey, because like I said, we talk about this, how do we escape the problem? And sometimes we try to go somewhere else, and it does, it fixes it temporarily. But then we suddenly find ourselves in the same situation.
Yeah, I think a common question that I'll ask myself if I'm in the midst of stress, and I think it's pretty powerful, is what am I feeling right now? Well, that's what I'm going to do, two questions. Mm-hmm. And what do I need? What do I need? What do I need right now? What am I feeling and what do I need? And having that awareness, I mean, that empowers us to be resilient.
And you made an important point, Laura, too, just to honor what you need. And that is so, so important too. Sorry, Leanne, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, not at all. It's such a good point. And I was going to say that, and Laura could speak to this probably better than I can, but I love the question about how am I feeling? Because it really does, becoming in tune and noticing, like taking the time to notice how am I feeling, naming it really does make a switch in your brain that it can be so effective and just help to ground you and help to clear your mind and help you just activate more of that rational part of your brain rather than that, the flight part of it. And so I really love that question. It's such a good tip for when you're in those moments to just pause and either say in your head how you're feeling or write it down and actually name it. And you will see that physical change in your body.
Yeah. Yeah. In previous episodes, I was talking about, should I quit my job? Because that escape mechanism, right? We just want to leave. But if we can pause it, maybe that is the answer. In certain scenarios, I'm not saying that it's not, but maybe it's not in some. And if we can pause and reflect and ask, what do I need? And then, how can I create that? How can I ask for what I want? Is it possible? How can I engage in that dialogue and have those important conversations? Both up and down our leadership channels. And so important. Leanne and Ryan, I would love to also hear what you're working on, because I was really excited when you first presented this idea, and all three of you, I was thrilled to have you all on the show. I'm so grateful that we're all here together so we can have this conversation. But I'd love to hear what you're working on.
Do you want to take it, Leanne, or do you want me?
Go ahead. Yeah.
All right. So we are fortunate enough to gather a bunch of kind of data, actually a test for student data, for a few different validated survey assessments, and we found a unique anomaly. So psychological safety, Amy Edmondson's Fearless Organization scan, been used time and time again, been refined. We found that that, and Paul referenced MASLAC, found that that and the reduction of burnout as measured by MASLAC's inventory were quite related, fairly strongly related. We also saw that psychological safety was related to a sense of inclusion. Almost the same correlation, which was interesting. We're like, okay, cool. What we then saw is that in the same exact data set, sense of inclusion and reduction of burnout were not well correlated. Oh. So it was very interesting. It was like, okay, we're missing a leg on the chair. Mm-hmm. And what is that leg? And Paul hinted at earlier, and that's very similar to Paul's work, in that it might be identity. And a lot of the constructs that we have built around things like psychological safety, burnout, and to be frank, even inclusion, have come from a lot of Western white, oftentimes actually in this field, female culture. And so we had very interesting conversations, and we decided to design our present research around those three things, but adding in the concept of stigma consciousness. And so stigma consciousness, for those that aren't aware, is kind of, as Paul was talking about, the awareness that your identity is showing up other than in a social system. And that additional capacity of you just thinking about you and how you're showing up, because you have to put on a face, you have to mask, you have to code switch, all of those things, that additional mental capacity that takes up might be related to reduction of burnout in some people, even when there is what we call inclusion and psychological safety in the system. So that is one of the things that we're currently looking into, but we're also doing a qualitative approach as well to see what some of the emergent aspects are of how people are qualifying, how they're showing up, and how does psychological safety relate to their sense of burnout and their sense of inclusion. Another thing that we're doing that I think is pretty darn cool, Leanne and I are very excited, is that in 2019, when Amy Edmondson wrote her book around psychological safety, she put in leadership behaviors that should create psychological safety in the environment. To our knowledge, that has never been empirically tested, that model. So we've actually included that in here because rather than just subjective measures of experience, we want to see what are some explicit observable behaviors that may relate to some of these experiences. What am I missing out, Leanne?
That was perfect. That was perfect. And then I'll just add too that the hope from this, after our research, is once we find out, you know, what are kind of these important drivers, how can we then train, right? Now that we know what are those leader behaviors that are most important, how do we train, right? How do we get this from the research kind of white coat area to the hands of actual leaders, and how do we help them improve on this psychological safety? We know that psychological safety is so critical, but unfortunately is not something that is, you know, all too common in organizations. So I think the next step for us after our findings is really, okay, how do we move this to practice?
And I think one of the things that we were most shocked at, which is why this field is so fun to work in, is we were like, oh, inclusion and burnout, I'm sure somebody's done the research on the gap between the two. There's very little research out there about relating those two to one another. Very little. I know Paul knows this very well too. So we were kind of like, wow, like that's terribly upsetting, but also a wonderful opportunity for us to gain more insights because there's something happening.
Yeah.
That is surprising, actually, that there really isn't anything or not a lot out there.
Yeah.
Well, and just to kind of complement that too, when you start to look at the neuroscience behind it and you start to see, you know, and when you, as you look at how the brain processes, the, you know, being in an out group actually is a high trigger for our, you know, when we think about our amygdalas, right? And that is that constant threat response. Mm-hmm. And that constant threat response can then lead to physical emotional, and mental well-being. And we know that it's critical as we think about the impacts to people's health, how critical it is that we can do more. And so I think all the work that everyone's been describing today is really about how do we continue to ensure that people can have the quality of life in both their personal and professional lives that actually makes a difference, because it really does over the long term wear on people. So earlier, Laura, when you described the kind of those back and forth, imagine that being in that constant state. And that's really what the difference with burnout is that constant repetitive state. And that's not easy for people to go through. That has a long-term effect on them. And so all of our work, I think we can, and I'm speaking on behalf of this group and everyone is more than capable of sharing, is to help to improve the quality of lives for individuals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that long-term state, it's not just a short-term impact on the brain. This is like long-term impact on the brain, even if it takes a couple of years to kind of get back to a state of feeling like we're in equilibrium or we're not in burnout anymore.
To Paul's point around that, you know, they say fire together, wire together, right?
Yeah.
That's the common phrase. And so oftentimes in folks that are in those acute stress states that have that high level of arousal and that, amygdala activation, they'll do appraisal of different events in their lives, and they might appraise those as negative, right? And then that fires together. So then they're constantly perpetually triggered in many moments of their lives now by this constant stressed out state. And so to the point, one of the reasons why it takes so long for this to come off is you have to rewire some of the things that actually you're experiencing that might not actually be contributing to burnout, but you are attributing it to it because of your current state psychologically. And your heightened arousal autonomically. And so it's very real and very serious. There's a lot of things that are exciting out there in the world that give you very similar sensations. But if you're in a state of burnout, there is going to be more stress, you know? So a way to see that is like type A people that get a really cool opportunity. They may not be looking in the mirror, but you get this new thing and it's like, wow, like congratulations, you got the promotion, you got this, you know, that's so cool. You got the opportunity to do this, and you instantly attribute that to, well, that's just more, you know?
Yeah.
And you can't really, you're now more anxious about it now. You're like, great, here's another thing to add to the plate, rather than, wow, I'm excited for that opportunity. That was really cool. I deserve that, you know? So it takes time to unlearn and relearn and rewire all those things.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. That was my normal state of being. Every accolade, everything. I was this goal seeking organism, and all of the good things, even something that would be fun, felt stressful. But for the longest time, I wasn't aware that I was in that state because that was my normal. And I find that quite often in type A overachievers who may or may not be looking in the mirror right now. And I love that you're taking this, you know, to the point where we're looking to create actionable things for people to do to increase their quality of life. And it's not just at this high level. It's, you know, what are these drivers? How can we develop that awareness? What are some of the other things that are contributing to that burnout? What are the fun things that might be contributing to that burnout? How can I unlearn some of these behaviors? And then what are those tangible things that we can actually do and model and share with other leaders? This has been such a great conversation. I know we're just touching the tip of the iceberg here with this conversation. It's so much deep, and I'm looking forward to following you on your journeys with your research, so that we can share this and get this out to more people. I think it's so important. Are there any last comments or any things that we didn't cover today that you'd like to leave our audience with?
I got a small one, but it's kind of interesting. We're doing some action research on these things with some of our own employees at Slalom right now. And one of the interesting findings, and Paul actually started us off there in terms of meaning, and finding meaning in your work. There's a really cool, kind of an interesting correlation, but it's about 12% of feeling used up at the end of the day can be attributed to understanding the why at work. And so something that I see with a lot of clients, and this sounds super business school-y, but when you set OKRs and KPIs for your teams and your organization, are you talking about widgets or are you talking about the greater impact of the thing that people are doing? Mm-hmm. And we coach teams on that, and I get to do a lot of fun work in that space. But something like OKRs, helping the well-being of employees, is not something I'm hearing people talking about right now. And so I think there's a lot of structural, operational, business school, tactical things that we can reconsider and reapproach and think differently about to help with meaningful outcomes for our employees and our systems.
I love that. Yeah, what are we measuring? Just where are we focusing? Cool. Thank you.
The only thing I would add is, so a lot of my research is actually in social support and specifically in coworker support. And so the only thing that I would like to, listeners to think about is how much power we have to really impact the lives of those around us. And even as coworkers or colleagues, you know, taking the time to just check in and ask how someone's doing, right? Or send the text or say, oh, how did that meeting go that I know you were stressed out about? Even something like that, that's really small, can make all the difference and does impact, you know, stress and can impact long-term burnout. And just knowing that you have social support, and that's something really interesting about the social support research, is that it's not even how often you've received help. It is about the perception that you would be able to receive help if you needed it. And so we have so much power to impact the climate that we work in. By just doing little things like that, whether it's more instrumental support, like helping someone with an actual task, or that emotional support and just being there and hearing someone. But, you know, we have that power, and, you know, something that sometimes we forget when we're also overwhelmed, but is a good thing to just kind of check in and be mindful about, you know, each day.
Oh, thank you. That is gold too.
And I would just want to echo the points. And I would just say, sometimes we forget we're all humans and we're humans supporting humans. And as we go through that process, sometimes we carry this sense of guilt and we carry this sense of frustration with ourselves, and it's give ourselves a little grace. It is normal to go through these things. And one thing is, and we talked a little bit about journaling earlier, but thinking about your own trigger, you know, when do you notice it come up for you? Just sit with it a little bit, you know, and jot it down. Think about what it feels like, and kind of explore it. Because one of the things you will learn is a lot about yourself is actually sometimes what's happening for you is also your greatest superpower, and how you bring that forward to really drive success. And I'm just going to put, I'm going to just a good book recommendation. I just read Tomorrow Mind, and it's a fairly new book that's out there. Absolutely worth some time, but it actually brings you kind of, how do you really drive and innovate? How do you bring creativity? How do you think about organizations? But how do you think about yourself in that mix? And one of the tips that comes out of it is slow down. Just press that pause button in life, and we forget to do that. We are problem solvers, and we're wired to troubleshoot, but we forget to press the pause button. And sometimes, you know, as the adage goes, we spend $100 to solve a $10 problem because we never stayed at the level of just exploring what was happening.
All such wonderful advice. I'm hearing the focusing on what you're measuring and shifting that focus to people, recognizing the support that you have around you and the power that you have in that, and then taking the pause to be mindful, journal, think about what are some of your triggers or those things that are driving you, and how can they be superpowers? All really wonderful advice, very tangible things that people can take with them and implement today. I want to thank you all for being on the show today and sharing your research, pouring into our listeners. I'm so grateful, and thank you so much.
Thank you for having us, Laura.
Thanks, Laura.
You are welcome. And for those of you listening, we're going to continue our series on the topic of burnout But I'm going to leave you the way we always leave our episodes, is just remember, everything is created twice. First in your mind, and then in physical form. Have a great rest of your week.